Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 446. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. I have a great episode in store for you all in this one. And I have a great guest with me to talk some early season hitting notables, both good and bad. Already off to a pretty crazy start to the season. My guest is a host, producer, and writer for FanGraphs, Fantasy Pros, and FTN, a member of the Sleeper and the Bus podcast, which won the Best Baseball Podcast in 2025 by the FSWA. Congrats. At Joe Arrico 99 on Twitter, Mr. Joe Arrico. How's it going, Joe?
It's going fantastic, Eric. It's great to chat with you, man. We've known each other a long time. I was still half expecting in my head to hear Eric Cross 04. That's where my brain still defaults to. But yeah, it's great to be on Sleeper in the Bus with those guys. I can't take a ton of credit. I mean, that goes to Paul and to Justin, who do a crazy amount of work on that show, and they've been doing it for a decade plus at this point. Going back to when they took it over from Eno. So for Jason and Colette and myself, we're very happy to contribute. But Paul and Justin take the lion's share of the credit, but I will, of course, be throwing it on my resume nonetheless.
Oh, absolutely, as you should. Yeah, it's one of the best podcasts out there and been that way for a long time. And yeah, Justin and Paul, I think one of my favorite combinations of people, like my favorite duo. Yeah. In the industry, because I think, I don't know if I told this story on here, but it was a few FPASs ago. We were doing a draft, and they had us in horseshoe kind of table setup where we had 1 through 15 that we were just sitting in draft order. I was next to Paul, who had done no rankings yet. It was obviously early November. So he was using Justin's rankings, who was same side as us, but he was on all the way down. He had the end 15 pick. Paul and I were 10 and 11 or whatever it was. And he was looking for an outfielder. Paul was looking at Justin's paper rankings. And I forget which player it was, but there was a player that Mason had way high. And Paul looks down and are you stupid? just right down the table, blurts it out. It was just hilarious. I love those two.
I love how non-PC we are on the show. And we will yell out things like that. A lot of the time, with podcasts, it's a lot of agreeing and a lot of ass kissing to some extent. Right. Paul and Justin will be like, you got to be the stupidest person. it'll be that type of banter back and forth. And sometimes I'm just sitting there for 10 minutes. It's like a tennis match sometimes where these two go at each other. And it's pretty fun to just sit and shut my mouth and observe those two go at it for a while.
Right. Just sit back and take it all in and be entertained. Yep. Yeah. They are definitely good for that. But
yeah.
God. Early season. I mean, we're about two-ish weeks. Yeah, a little over 2 weeks into the season now. And yeah. We already got some breakouts starting to happen. We got a lot of big name players off the cold start. So we'll kind of do a handful of each of these guys. Well, we'll start though with a little bit of strategy here because, Joe, I'm sure you get these questions just like I do on Twitter. Should I cut this player? Should I, trade away this player? All the early overreactions. And generally I say, if it's a guy you drafted top 150 or something like that, you're not going to cut him a week and a half into the season unless there's a major injury. But, how do you kind of balance all the early season stuff? Because obviously we're only, 11, 12 games into the season. We got 40-ish plate appearances for most of these guys. So it's a very small sample size, but we have to react some way. So how do you approach all these early season metrics and stats, and kind of what do you look for when you're coming to your own conclusion here on, should I react to this player or should I kind of hit the pause button?
By and large, however you felt about a player 2 weeks ago when you drafted him is still how you should feel about them today. But for the most part, there are going to be examples of players, specifically pitchers, where it's easy to pinpoint, the velocity is way, way down. They don't have the stuff that they used to have. You can tell a little bit quicker with pitchers when to move on. But generally speaking, the sample size is not large enough for me to draw anything. You have to act now. If you know the Jordan Walkers of the world, if you didn't pick them up a week ago, then they're gone, right? So you have to have those quick reactions. But at the same time, I don't know how much I want to put stock into pretty much anybody at this point. Like you mentioned, we have such a small sample size. The biggest plate appearance sample size of anybody at the time of recording is Zach Neto with 60 plate appearances. And if you looked at 60 plate appearances that happened in July or August, you know, you isolated any 60 plate appearance sample, doesn't mean a heck of a lot. And it probably means less when you're talking about the beginning of the season when these guys are still rusty. Some of them are coming off the WBC, and we've seen a lot of guys, specifically Mariners, who are the WBC, have all struggled. Yeah. So there's a lot of variables this time of year that I think will stabilize as we have a bigger sample size. I don't like to overreact a ton. That being said, you know, the last 3 to 5 rounds of picks that you made, those are more speculative picks anyway. So I'm willing to move on from those last few guys to pick up a guy where I think there has been a tangible change, with the caveat being that maybe those numbers revert back next week. But the things that I tend to look at, it usually comes down to plate discipline, whether we're talking about a hitter or a pitcher. I'll take Joey Cantillo, for example. He was just the name that I had open on Fangraphs on the page that I clicked to. Are they getting as many chases as they did last year? Look at the O-swing. I'm looking at the zone contact and the in-zone contact. What kind of contact are batters making against them on pitches in the zone? Are they getting swings and misses? The swinging strike rate is a huge thing. And also the CSW percentage. Those are probably the main ones in terms of plate discipline. Are they getting chases? What's the zone contact look like? The swinging strike rate and the called strikes plus whiffs. To go along with stuff, and stuff I know is kind of, you know, some people think it's taboo, it doesn't mean anything. I am more leaning towards it's a tool in your tool belt, not the be all and end all, but just something else that you look at. And if a pitcher has a massive increase in stuff, whether it be on one pitch or their entire arsenal, maybe not after one start, but after 2 or 3 starts, if those numbers maintain, then I start to see them as more real. So with pitchers, if you've seen 2 or 3 really, really good starts from somebody, say a Jose Soriano, a Kyle Harrison, you can start to believe a little bit more. With the hitters, I like a little bit of a larger sample size if possible.
Yeah, no, I think pitching is easier to see stuff pretty early on. Like, so even like in the minor league, because like you go to a minor league game and you say, oh, like that guy's awesome on the mound. You know, hitting, it takes you maybe like a full series, you know, 6, 7 games to get a good idea of a hitter. But yeah, for me, like the general rule of thumb is, especially for bigger name players that are struggling, the longer the track record, the longer the leash I give them. I mean, if they're coming off like 1 year, like, I don't know, Trent Grisham's first name comes to my mind. Like, Grisham was kind of terrible. Then he was great last year, and then he's off to a slow start. Like, all right, I might not give him as long of a leash as, like, I don't know, like a Freddie Freeman or someone like that. So guys that you know, like, all right, they've been here, they've done this many, many times. You know, they're probably going to step out of it at some point. But yeah, it's really hard to, you know, kind of not overreact to a lot of these things. But we got to remember, like you said, you know, 60 plate appearances or less for all these guys so far. We're only 1/15 of the way through a season or something. Like, we're like 7% into the season or something like that. Like, there's still 148, 149 games left to be played. So it's just really, you know, slumping at the beginning of the season gets put more kind of on a pedestal than if these guys are slumping in June or August. Like, you have a 12-game stretch where you're hitting .150 in August. All right, yeah, you'll know, people will notice it, but they won't freak out. Maybe the average goes from 272 to 264 or something like that. But right now it's like, oh, they're hitting .150, you know, 12 games in. So I think you have to remember that, you know, what time of year it is. And, you know, like you mentioned, a lot of these guys, there's a lot of WBC hangover for sure. And like you mentioned Seattle, who are a couple of names we'll start with here in a second. Seattle as a team is still hitting .184 right now, which is insane. The next lowest is the Angels at .201. So they're the only team under 200 right now. Like, basically all of their hitters are struggling. We're going to talk about two of them, but, you know, J-Rod off to another slow start. I mean, imagine if he could just put together a full year and not get off to a slow start. That would be phenomenal. But yeah, the two names though for Seattle that we'll start with here, Josh Naylor and Cal Raleigh, a little mini segment I'm calling Sucking in Seattle, because I want to go with hitless in Seattle, but I'm like, no, these guys are just flat out sucking right now. They are both terrible. I mean, I feel like with both these guys, I mean, both are coming off just phenomenal years in different ways. Josh Naylor, you know, randomly stole 30 bags last year, like him and Soto. I'm not sure what got into them last year, but, you know, 20-30 year for Josh Naylor, hit .295. And then Cal Raleigh, obviously, 60 home runs as a catcher is absolutely phenomenal. I feel like many people expected some sort of regression. And, you know, that's fair to say, given what they did and kind of breaking out in their certain ways. But they've both been absolutely zero so far for the most part. Cal Raleigh's got one home run, hitting 143, 236, 245 in 55 plate appearances. Naylor still waiting for his first home run, his first steal, his first run scored. He's a lot of goose eggs there. And a 104, 173, 104 slash line. So zero extra base hits, his first 52 plate appearances. So with Naylor, with Raleigh, you know, are you concerned about either of these two guys, or, you know, they're both veterans? Are you kind of thinking that they're just going to snap out of it at some point here?
I'm a little bit worried with both of them, and I do wonder how much that WBC impact had, because Julio, another Mariner, he's always off to a slow start, but it seems particularly bad this year. I wonder if teams will be a little bit more hesitant the next time around to let their top guys go if we continue to see this hangover last more into the season. I'm a little bit worried about both of them, maybe more so Raleigh, and I have zero shares of Raleigh. I like to take early catchers, but not quite this early, not quite into the second round in a two, in a one catcher league. I'll punt it all the way to the end and give me Herrera or Kirk or, you know, whoever at the end, Rutschman, whoever it was this year in one catcher leagues. In two catcher leagues, I wasn't paying the premium on Raleigh. Now, I don't expect this to continue this particular stretch, but we are seeing the absolute downside of this type of profile for a guy that is a massive power hitter who does struggle with contact, who maybe chases a little bit more than we'd like. We're seeing a 67% zone contact when 85% is average. He was only at 81 last year. He was already below average contact rate in the zone last year. It's got even worse. He was at a 15% swing strike rate last year, which is incredibly high, and that's up to 20. He's not hitting the ball hard when he does make contact, which is few and far between at this point, but a 7% barrel rate and a 21% hard hit rate is awful. I do think that Cal Raleigh will turn it around. I think the power inside of him is just too great for this to not eventually turn itself around. And if you look at the rest of season projections on Fangraphs, 32 homers, 33, 38, 37. I think that worst case scenario, you get a 2023 or 2024 season from him where he gives you about, you know, 25 to 30 home run floor, where he's giving you about 80 runs and ribbies, and he's probably not helping you out a ton in the batting average department, likely reverting back to 23 and 24. That's kind of where I'm at with him. With Josh Naylor, it's a little bit different. The concern is, it's a different type of concern, because Naylor doesn't have the one super strong fantasy carrying tool. He doesn't have a ton of power. His barrel rates top out about 8% in his career. The speed was nice last year, but this is not a quick individual. And while the batting average that people are probably seeing into their phones or their cars right now, the batting average is the carrying tool. He had 243 in 2024, so it's not something you can just bank on every year. And when there are those players where you have to kind of, you know, Frankenstein the stats together and say he has a 30 home run season, he has a 300 batting average season, he has a 30 stolen base season, like you put that all together, he's a first round player. But there are also a lot of flaws in Josh Naylor. And one thing that hasn't been talked about a ton, he was playing for a contract last year down the stretch. Yeah. And when you are playing for a contract, you're going to do those extra little things. You're going to stay in the lineup when you're extra banged up. You're going to try and make yourself more valuable, and you're going to try and make it so that the end of season stat sheet is more appealing. And what's something that you can do? You can steal bases. And Josh Naylor, although God bless him, 19 steals in 54 games as a Mariner last year. He was on a 60 steal pace. It just was so unsustainable. But I think part of it was he was going for that contract. And not to say that he's not trying now that he has the contract, but you are going to see players generally in year one of a new deal not perform the same way they did the year they were playing for that contract. And there might be some of that this year with Naylor.
Yeah, no, we've seen that a lot. And yeah, it was really easy to say with Naylor, like, oh yeah, the steals are going to go back down. I mean, he was never like a zero in the stolen base department. Like, he'd give you like, you know, six, seven, eight. He'd always give you a little bit for the most part. He had six in 2024, but yeah, 30 last year. Like, we knew that was going down. But yeah, what if someone told you before the season, like, hey, Josh Naylor and Juan Soto are going to combine for nearly 70 steals? Like, you would think, all right, what drugs are you on? But yeah, with Naylor, like, I feel like, you know, 20 homer bat, I think is, I mean, that's what he was last year. I think that's what he kind of profiles as. Like, it's a, you know, slightly above average power, but like you mentioned, doesn't really stand out. Like, it's not plus power or anything like that. But, you know, he's always hit the ball at pretty decent angles. You know, he gets to that pull air rate, which is down this year, but it's still early. But yeah, under the hood, I mean, he's still, you know, kind of the same guy. The contact skills have gone down a little bit this year, but Yeah, those usually take a little bit longer to stabilize. So I'm not, ringing the alarm on that. Though he's always been a guy that chases a lot too, and these high chase rate guys are often prone to some peaks and valleys more so than other players. So I'm not like terribly worried about either one. I am a little bit worried about both. I don't have any shares of either. I'm like you. I love catchers. I'm actually becoming kind of like a catcher guy. I love all these young catchers we have now, but. Yeah, I was more so drafted, the Drake Baldwins of the world, the Augustine Ramirez's of the world, as opposed to going second round on Cal Raleigh. I mean, that's the highest I remember a catcher going since like that 1 year Joe Mauer like beasted out, and then he was like a back end first round pick the next year, and that just did not work out whatsoever. Yeah. So I just can't go catcher that early, fourth, fifth round, sure, whatever. I can do that. But yeah, I think these guys will get it going. I think Seattle will get it going. It's a very talented team all around. I think one of the better all-around teams in baseball, so I think they'll get it going. But yeah, definitely some concern, a little bit of concern with Naylor and Raleigh, but not full-blown panic yet for me.
Also a team that had a shorter offseason after going to the ALCS and playing month of baseball. So there could just be a little bit extra wear and tear that'll take these guys just a little bit extra time to shake off to start this year, but not overly worried.
Yeah, 100% agree. Keep it right in the AL West to one of my favorite guys who – once again, off to a slow start this year after just tearing it up in spring training. That's Wyatt Langford with the Texas Rangers. 51 plate appearances so far, 160, 176, 280 slash line. Has a steal, but still looking for his first home run. Guy that's had, a couple decent years his first 2 years. Went 16-19 as a rookie in 2024, and then 22-22 in 2025, but was hitting 240, 250. It felt a little underwhelming, at least compared to many people's expectations, myself included. But this year, it's off to a really poor start. A lot of guys in the Texas lineup kind of are, not to the same extent Seattle is, but Langford just not doing anything with the bat right now. Metrics are still actually kind of fine. He's still hitting the ball hard, 43% hard hit rate, 8% barrel rate, but not walking like he usually does. Strikeout rate's a little higher. As well, but making plenty of contact though in zone is actually higher than it was the last couple of years. But what do you make here of Wyatt Langford? I feel like there's starting to be pretty decisive splits on Langford. There's still the people that like me that are still very high in him, think he can be a top 25 caliber player at some point. And then the people that think he's overrated. And where are you at on Wyatt Langford these days, Joe?
I think that there will be a time in his career where Wyatt Langford is being drafted as a first round player. I'm not sure when that will be, but I think that he has the potential to be a 30-30 guy who hits 280, who gives you a boatload of runs in RBI. I mean, each of the last 2 years, 134 games, 74 runs, 73 runs, 74 RBI, 62. If he plays an entire season, 100 and 100 is in the cards for Wyatt Langford. Like you mentioned, below the surface, there's not a lot to be overly concerned about. The exit velocities are in line with where he's been. The barrel rate's down from 14. I don't know if I ever expected a 14% barrel rate, but I do think he could be somewhere around where his career number is right now, about 11%, 12% barrel rate, 45% hard hit rate. I think that's where he'll stabilize at. But talking about the plate discipline stuff from earlier, he's chasing a little bit more than usual from 23 to 30%, but contact rates are the same. The swinging strike rates are the same. He's not drawing walks, which is a little bit of a concern. He's had 51 plate appearances and just one free pass. Last year, he was walking a ton. It was 13%. So that'll be something to monitor. I think that will correct itself, and it might just be some small sample size stuff. Because as a bit of a side note, hitters as a whole are just really struggling. And we do see that in April sometimes. Just going through the lists, if you look at the top 50 hitters versus top 50 pitchers, you could pick out, off the top of your head, 15 hitters at least that are really struggling. With pitchers, it's been a little bit more stable. So I think you give it a little bit more time and Langford will figure himself out. The one thing that worries me with him in the profile is just the hamstring, oblique, side. I don't know if it was hamstring, actually. I think it was oblique and side problems that kept him on the IL last year. I think it was three separate IL stints, and that's the type of injury that can repeat on itself. So I'm not questioning the talent at all. I wonder if he will be able to get to that 650 plus plate appearances, though. That's the only thing stopping him in my mind from being a first round player.
Yeah, no, that's very valid. It feels like he always has something, or either has something or just came off of a minor thing. None of those injuries were anything major that I recall, but it's like, all right, he's going to miss you know, a week and a half here, 2-3 weeks there, and then all of a sudden, yeah, you're down in that 550 to 580 plate appearance range where he's been the last couple of years. So, yeah. And maybe, you know, there's some lingering effects there. I know I'm always a little hesitant with these like, kind of core body, like middle body injuries because of all the, you know, the torque that goes into swinging the baseball bat. So you can easily kind of retweak that oblique or that side muscle or whatever, you know, other ones are in there that he likes to kind of, you know, strain it from time to time. But yeah, the talent absolutely is there. I mean, he's still one of the better minor league guys I saw in the last decade. I think he was running the minor leagues for like 200 plate appearances or whatever it was, but he was a beast. Like, he's shown at times all the tools needed to be that high impact player. And he's a very good runner. I think he's been like 80th plus percentile in the major leagues, 85th percentile this year. You know, he's shown that he can hit the ball hard. We already went over that. You know, maybe the K rate's been a little bit high, but nothing, you know, too terrible. You know, for the most part, he's always been a guy that walks as well. So yeah, it is kind of peculiar that he only has one walk so far, but maybe he's getting into his head and kind of pressing at this point. But yeah, he's still 24. It's a beautiful swing. You know, I think one of the more picturesque right-handed swings in baseball right now. And like I said, all those skills are there. It's just kind of, you know, one area has been kind of holding him down at all times, and sometimes this the health. So, he'll put it together eventually. I'm right there with you. Like, it's gonna happen at some point, and hopefully he can get it going this year. Because I do have a lot of Langford shares, both in redraft and the keeper dynasty leagues. So, fingers crossed, because my teams could absolutely use him to kind of get it going here. All right. Next guy here, I mean, I guess I'm picking all AL West guys. I didn't even realize that when I was putting him on the outline here. We'll go to the Athletics with Nick Kurtz. I mean, what the fuck's going on with Nick Kurtz right now? I mean, guy that was maybe the best hitter in baseball, or at least like top three hitter in baseball for the last, two-thirds of the season, whatever it was last year, ended with 36 home runs, 290, 383, 619 slash line, and that's all in his 489 play appearances. He scored 90 runs and drove in 86 in just 117 games. So, like, I think he was on pace for like 120 runs and 115 RBI or something in that range. And like, all the metrics were, at least in the quality of contact, were off the charts. Yeah, some of the contact whiff rates were not where you wanted them to be, but you know, Kurtz was absolutely dominant. And you know, reason why I'm not super worried right now, Joe, I mean, he's kind of similar to last year. I mean, yeah, the whiff rate's gone even higher, so that's a concern. But he's still hitting the ball very, very hard right now. This hasn't found the outfield seats yet. I mean, he's still doing a lot of good under the hood here. So what's your level of concern right now with Nick Kurtz?
Yeah, they also haven't played a ton in Sacramento, which is part of the appeal of Nick Kurtz, is that home ballpark where you're expecting greatness pretty much every time he steps on the field. He was a guy that I was fading coming into the year, not really based on the talent, just based on the price. I thought people just got a little bit ahead of themselves in redraft as a top 20 pick, occasionally a first rounder in 15 teamers. It seemed a little bit rich for somebody with his contact profile, but in spite of the struggles to this point of the season, you know, 39% strikeout rate will fly off the page at you. The contact profile actually looks better in the zone. I mean, from 75% zone contact last year, that's a horrible number. That is like mostly you're going to be in AAA with those type of numbers, but the raw power made up for it. This year, the raw power, even with the lack of homers, is there. A 16% barrel rate, a 58% hard hit rate. The max EV this year is 115.1, which is harder than he hit a ball all of last season. But getting that contact up from 75 to 84% is huge. Even if he does chase a little bit more, I'm fine with that, because the chase rate is already so low for Nick Kurtz. It was 22% last year. If he's at 26% and we're getting much better contact in the zone, I'll take it. The swinging strike rate is actually down from last year. It's marginal. It's 14.2 to 13.9, but it's not indicating he should be a 40% strikeout rate guy. I've gone from being at the point of I'm happy, I don't need any Nick Kurtz shares this year, to in my trading leagues thinking I need to get a couple of shares of Nick Kurtz, because I think when they do get back to California, to Sacramento in particular, not just California in general, once they get home to their home ballpark, I think we will see some good things from Nick Kurtz. You also have to consider the fact that he's stolen a couple bags so far. He only stole two bases all of last year. He's already stolen two. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be a burner, but even if he gives you eight steals or something from first base, you'll take that all day. I worry about the batting average. I don't think he's a 290 hitter, but I think you're probably going to get about 30 homers with a 250 batting average and a boatload of RBI. So as much as I didn't want to draft him, I kind of want to trade for him and see if I can get him at a discount for somebody who might have panicked.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of panic going on. Just from what I've seen on Nick Hertz, people questioning, oh, was last year legit? Was he playing over his head? You know, how much was, you know, is the home ballpark factoring into what he had last year? Which are all valid questions. I mean, I have those questions too. I'm definitely a Nick Kurtz guy, and you know, this guy's is the power is off the charts, and that home ballpark will absolutely help. So I still think he can get the 40 home runs this year. He'd be a huge three category guy with an average that won't kill you, because like you mentioned, like the contact skills aren't the greatest, but when he does, you know, make contact, it's usually very loud. So you've seen these guys, like I always kind of point to like Rafael Devers. He's never had great contact skills, but he's always hit like 260, 270 for the most part, you know, in most of his seasons, because he hits the ball so damn hard when he does make contact. And you know, having a low chase rate also helps in that regard too, which Kurtz definitely has. So yeah, I'm not, you know, one to 10 level concern for him, Kurtz. I'm like a 3, not super concerned right now. It's a lot of metrics are still very good. Like you mentioned, like get back home, get some home cooking in that ballpark. I think you're going to see, you know, Kurtz and, I mean, a lot of these other, like Soderstrom is struggling. Jacob Wilson is struggling. You know, Rooker's been struggling. And he's also, you know, looking like he's hurt right now, too, after today. So, yeah. A lot of these guys are struggling right now. So, I think you'll see a lot of these guys start to get it going here over the next, you know, few weeks or so.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's go over to some guys that are off to some great starts. And maybe one of the hottest players in all of baseball right now had another home run today. That is Sal Stewart, kind of one of my favorite players in all of baseball already. I've been a big Sal Stewart guy for a while now, obviously following him up through the minor leagues. He already has 4 home runs and 3 steals so far this year in 55 plate appearances with a nice 364, 473, 727 slash line. I mean, Joe, a lot of the metrics right now are good or great. Actually, most of them are great, you know, kind of top 10 to 12% dial range in a lot of these categories here, especially quality of contact. Though, you know, contact skills are pretty good too. He's got a great ballpark to hit in half the time, obviously, and pretty fun Cincinnati lineup, some fun players around him. And so that's a kind of up-and-coming young lineup with a lot of potential. So a lot of good here. I mean, kind of all the arrows for Sal Stewart are pointing up. So what do you think here on Sal Stewart? Are you buying what we're seeing from him so far?
Yeah, I only have 2 shares, and I'm kicking myself for not taking him pretty much everywhere. I went back and looked, actually, earlier today at his ADP in October, November, and it was like 250, 260.
Yeah, it was
like
crazy.
It was free money, and we should have seen it, and we didn't. A guy who debuted, hit 5 homers in 18 games in that ballpark with that lineup around him, with some speed too. I don't think many people realize, like, 17 steals in the minors last year. He's not a terrible. I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that he's 225 pounds. Maybe the fact that most people named Sal don't tend to be very fast. I don't know what it was, but Sal Stewart was not perceived as this burner. Maybe he's not, but he can give you 15 steals this year or something close to it, especially with 3 already in the bank. I mean, there's nothing I can really say to criticize him. I just think people got really worried when Suarez got signed, and they're thinking there goes the at-bats for him. He's going to be in the minors. He's going to be platooning or something. But he's hit cleanup in every game of the season to begin the year for them, and I expect that to continue. I think we could be looking at 25 homers, 15 steals, and a 275 batting average. And next year, Sal Stewart's a top 70 pick, top 60 pick, possibly. If he has, you know, multi-eligibility, there's a possibility he has first and third if he gets third base as well, which is a horrible position. Maybe he's even a top 50 guy.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. Yes, yeah, third base, and yeah, after the few studs at the top, it kind of gets pretty hairy pretty quick there with some guys that are just, you know, got question marks in terms of, you know, durability or track record or just, you know, skill in general. So, yeah. third base would be really fun to have eligibility for him. But, he's not a burner by any means, but he's just one of those smart base runners. Like, he's just a smart ball player. You know, outside of what he can do with the bat, he's a smart ball player. We've seen guys that are, you know, like 30th percentile sprint speed or whatever steal some bags, you know, because they're smart. Like Pujols would always give you, you know, 8 to 10 steals every year for the most part because he was a smart base runner. And we all know Pujols was slow as crap, but he still stole bags because he read pitchers well. He read their moves well. He got good jumps. Like, there's other aspects that go into stolen base outside of speed, and Stewart has those. He has those intangibles that don't always show up in a box score or on a Savant page or a Fangraphs page. But, yeah, he's just pummeling the ball. He has more walks than strikeouts. So he really has, the entire package. He makes contact. He makes loud contact. He walks. He keeps the K rate in check. A lot of good here for Sal Stewart. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm kind of thinking he'll be a top, 6-7 guy at whatever position he's eligible at next year, at one of those two corners or both. And, yeah, be in that top, maybe even top 50 range, I think. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. We end of the year and Sal Stewart's like 275 with like 32 home runs or something like that. That wouldn't surprise me at all. And if that's the case, you're probably looking at the National League Rookie of the Year, unless Connor Griffin beasts out or Weatherholt beasts out or McLean or one of them. But yeah, Stewart right now leader in the clubhouse for a Rookie of the Year award, which is really cool. Really cool to see.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
And then next guy, probably the leader in the clubhouse for the American League Rookie of the Year award, that's Chase DeLotter with the Cleveland Guardians. Already has 5 home runs, 275, 333, 675 slash line. He almost had another home run the other day. Took a Cole Reagans pitch out to left center, hit it off the wall. So came about, 10 feet or so shy of having his 6th home run of the season. And just a guy that has all the talent in the world, but anybody that's kind of followed him over the years knows that the durability has been a massive question mark with Chase DeLotter. But he's also shown what he's capable of doing when healthy, and we're seeing that now. A lot of good metrics under the hood across the board. That's always been the case with him. I've always said he was one of the top 10 most talented prospects in baseball with bottom 10 durability. So hopefully, I'm not saying the durability concerns are behind him, so I'd be foolish to say. That's still definitely a concern in the forefront of my mind right now. But we're seeing all the good right now being put on a bright stage in the major leagues with DeLotter so far the first 2 weeks of the season with Cleveland. So what are your thoughts here on Chase DeLotter? Is he a guy that you're intrigued by?
Oh, for sure. Like, from a talent perspective, there's not really a single thing that I could stand here and say, but like, there's nothing. He hits the ball hard. He has a great contact profile, which is actually better this year than it was in the minors last year. 88% zone contact. The chase rate's only at 24%. The swing and misses are essentially non-existent there. The only concern is what you mentioned, is how many games this guy plays every year. In 2023, it was 57. 24, it was 39. Last year, it was 42. Like, he just doesn't stay healthy. And there was already an injury scare this year. I forget. Was it a foul ball, or was it he got hit by a pitch? Whatever it was last week.
Yeah.
He was out of the lineup for a day. There's some guys, it feels like injuries are just drawn to them. Cole Reagans gets hit with a line drive the other day off of Jose Ramirez after a season where he's not healthy. There's some guys, it just feels like they're drawn to injuries. And I hope that's not the case with DeLotter, but it really feels like it has been the case. And maybe he'll shed that narrative. I was talking to Mason about this the other day. Brandon Nimmo. Remember, we always talked about Brandon Nimmo as he's always injury prone. He'll never make it through a year. 150 games in 4 straight seasons now. So players can definitely change that perception and that reality. Has he done it already, though? I'm not 100% sure. And I think you could possibly capitalize on the hype here and get yourself a really sexy name for Chase DeLotter. Like, you might be able to trade him for a top 100 player. And I'd be pretty tempted if you were able to get back a, maybe it's not a Nolan McLean, but somebody in that kind of 70 to 100 ADP range. Maybe it's a Luis Robert, a George Springer, a Michael Harris, whoever it is. I feel like you should, if you own him specifically for redraft, I feel like it's worth exploring what people are willing to give you for him.
Yeah, no, even me as a, obviously, a I've been a huge DeLotter guy for a long time. I even tweeted the other day that, you know, with how high I've been on him for so long, even when people were kind of jumping ship because of the injuries, like him excelling right now gives me like proud papa vibes. Like, oh, that's my boy right there. He's finally doing it. Like, I get proud papa vibes right now with Chase DeLotter. Maybe that's a little weird. I don't know. But that's how I feel. So, but yeah, even me, a big DeLotter guy, I mean, I'd at least kick the tires on a potential trade. But at the same time, I would aim very high because, you know, this is I've always said, like, this is maybe one of the best times to sell high is when a young, you know, even like a top caliber prospect debuts and does well out of the gate. That's the time that you can capitalize on that. But at the same time, you're like, you know, in the back of your mind, hey, what if this is just the start of something that could be really good? And maybe DeLotter's a top 25 player eventually, because that's the upside we're talking about, because he has the contact, the approach, the power, the speed. It's all there with DeLotter, but obviously the floor is a little bit lower than most due to those injuries that he's had a lot of over the years. But yeah, I'd aim top 100 bare minimum, maybe even shoot top 75. You don't get something that you're like, wow, this is, I got to take this. If that feeling, if that's not your initial reaction, if you're like, oh, I don't know if I should take this, then the answer is no. And that's kind of always what I say with these types of players. Like, if it's an immediate, like, wow, this person just offered me that guy, yeah, I'm going to take that, then yeah, that you definitely can entertain that. But if that's not your initial reaction, I would just wait, hold it out, and kind of just wait for a better offer to come, or just hold on to him. So I think he's going to be a really good player for a long time if he can avoid the IL. We'll see. That's still, who knows? You know, who knows if he can.
Injuries are just so impossible to predict. With a guy who's had a bunch, I'd lean towards there's probably going to be some more. But also, I fully agree with, you know, capitalizing right out of the gate, whether it's redraft or even potentially dynasty. I mean, this is, you might end the show here. This might be a sore spot, but like Christian Campbell at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, 100%.
Like a bat out of hell for the first couple weeks of the season, like a 200 WRC plus. If you sold him in redraft in the first 2 weeks last year, then you're sitting in your new vacation home that you purchased with your league winnings laughing at us right now. So sometimes it's better to be prudent. You know, for every Christian Campbell, there is a Bobby Witt and Julio and Corbin Carroll, who's just amazing right away. But when there's that injury risk baked in, I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice to just at least not kick the tires, you know, just see what people, somebody might say, yeah, all right, I'll give you Matt Olson for him or something. Or, you know, you might get a crazy offer. You never know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, you never know. It just takes one person to give you that offer. That's all it takes. So. You might be surprised what you get. I mean, it's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to you too, Joe. You know, sometimes you get those offers. You're like, yep, I will take that. Thank you very much. All right, next guy up here, guy that's finally breaking out. I think we've been waiting for this guy to break out for a few years now. But Jordan Walker finally doing his thing in St. Louis. 5 home runs. I think he had like 4 home runs in a 6-game stretch or whatever it was. 5 home runs, 49 plate appearances, 295, 367, 682 slash line. And every metric that has to do with hitting the ball hard, he's either number one or at least top 5, you know, 99th percentile in barrel rate, 100th percentile in average EV, X slug, hard hit rate. He's leading the league in several of these categories. He's a 27% barrel rate. Average EV over 97 miles an hour and a 70% hard hit rate. I mean, yeah, we're talking 30 batted balls, so it's still a very small sample size. But, you know, Walker is a guy that's always, you know, even when he was struggling on the surface, he always like had the you know, the hard hit rates and the bat speed and even, you know, good sprint speed as well. Kind of all those things under the hood. You're like, all right, we still see the path to him being a really good player. You know, but the angles have always been crap. And this year, finally getting the ball in the air more consistently. We'll see if that continues. Again, I want to see that stabilize more than 2 weeks. But, hey, a lot of good here so far. It's, you know, everything you can ask for out of Jordan Walker through 2 weeks. Are you buying it, Joe?
I am kind of buying it. I think that he'll be better than we've seen him before. And it's not a terribly high bar to clear, especially recently. I mean, he had a 116 WRC plus in 2023. He has not cracked even a league average season at any level for any period of time since then. And I know he's dealt with some injuries. He missed a little bit of time, but he's been pretty piss poor for two whole years now. I find it hard to believe that he is now a superstar. Like, these barrel and hard hit rates are what you'd expect to see if we had Babe Ruth type of Statcast data. 23 barrel rate, 70 hard hit rate, 93 average EV, or 97 average EV. But there still are some concerns within the profile for me. The contact rates are still not good. And part of that in the early going could just be that Jordan Walker is hitting the crap out of everything. So he's swinging at everything and he doesn't really care what the contact rates are, because when he's making contact right now, the ball's leaving the yard. So yeah, we give it a little bit more time to stabilize. They might look better. He's never been an amazing contact guy. He's at 81 zone contact, 69.6 contact overall. It's not amazing to go along with a 15% swing strike rate. Once the batted ball data starts to come back down to earth a little bit, I fear that we might be looking at a little bit more of a pedestrian season. I think it'll still be very good, but I don't think Jordan Walker is going to be a top five round player next year the way that I could see it with Chase DeLauder or Sal Stewart. I think that it's possible. I mean, if you just look at him, he fits the part. He's 6'6". He looks like an athlete. He really, when you see him in the batter's box, he looks like he could be a superstar.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that he's fully ready yet. And, you know, it's funny. We've been waiting for so long. You mentioned it. I've mentioned it on a show earlier this week. He's still only 23 years old. So there's a chance that he's not fully polished. We're seeing a taste right now of what the upside could look like in a couple of years once he is a fully rounded major league player. But I think we're probably looking at low 20s homers, low teens stolen bases with maybe a 260, 270 batting average. I might be totally wrong, and this might be a 40 home run season incoming. But I'm not sure that the breakout is going to sustain the way some other people do. I think those barrel and hard hit rates are going to normalize in the 12% and 50% range, respectively. And it'll be a good season from him. I'm not sure I'm ready to declare that this is, you know, the summer of George type of thing for Jordan Walker.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. You know, what I kind of get the vibe here with Walker, and it's not like a direct player comp by any means, but it gives me kind of like Joe Adell vibes a little bit, where, you know, obviously, like, both these guys have, you know, a lot of strength, a lot of speed, athleticism. Like, they look like they're just, you know, premium athletes. And, you know, obviously Adell had that nice breakout last year with a bunch of power, where he's now like, oh yeah, he's like a top 125, 150 guy, or whatever he was going, you know, in ADP this year. I think it was in that general ballpark, where, you know, maybe that at times they could be a top 100 player back end, you know, but by and large, probably just outside of it, probably not top 50 guys. They still have their flaws, each of them, but, you know, like, all right, at least maybe they aren't going to turn into the superstar that we thought, at least the all round superstar, but, you know, they can have star like qualities and still have, you know, some value to fantasy teams. That's kind of where I'm at on Walker. I mean, I think he's going to be, like a top, maybe top 100. I'll give him maybe back in top 100, but yeah, I'm higher long term on the Lauders and the who's the guy we just talked about? Sal Stewart. We talked about him 10 minutes ago. I'm higher on those guys. They have more, I think, staying power as like a top 100 or even higher than that player. So.
Even the next guy we're going to talk about, I think that I'm actually higher on than Walker long term. I'm not sure how you feel about that one.
Yeah, the next guy, I've always been so, you know, all over the place with this next guy, and it's Cam Smith with the Houston Astros, a guy that had, you know, some pretty good prospect pedigree. He was a first round pick by the Cubs, went to the Houston Astros as part of the Kyle Tucker trade. So obviously, being a big piece back in the Tucker return, so there's a lot of expectations on him, and he has some flashes in his rookie year, but overall ended with a 236, 312, 358 slash line. This year, off to a much better start. He has cooled a little bit of late, but 273, 385, 523, three bombs, three steals, and 52 plate appearances. Yeah, I think the one thing that people seem to kind of overlook, and it's easy to do so, but he barely had any time in the minor leagues. Like, he was he was there for a quick second. I don't remember how many plate appearances it was. Actually, I could probably pull it up. It wasn't a lot. How many was it? It was
134, I think.
134, I think. Yeah, so that's, what's that, like 35 or so games in the minor leagues? Like, that's not a lot. So, but he was deemed like an advanced bat. He was pushed hard. He kind of had to There's some injuries. He got called up probably quicker than they wanted. So he's still young. He's 23 as well and very inexperienced, can kind of compared to his peers in terms of professional plate appearances, you know, between the minors and the majors. But still a lot of good here. Another one of those guys like Walker where, like, all right, the bat speed, sprint speed, all these kind of things were still keeping you intrigued. But I think there's some downside with him here, too. You look at the Savant page. You know, there's kind of the sliders are all over the place. So Cam Smith, very intriguing. I'm actually a little bit higher on Walker, but I like both these guys to some extent. I'm not, you know, I'm still higher on Stewart and DeLauder than these two, but I'm definitely intrigued by Cam Smith. But what do you think here, Joe?
Yeah, I think it's really important what you mentioned. This guy essentially skipped the minor leagues, yep, was traded for a marquee guy who is now the highest paid player, I think, in the league on a per year basis. Kyle Tucker making whatever 60 some odd million dollars a year. He gets traded for that guy. You're the replacement for that guy. So there's a lot of pressure there. Plus, they moved him from third base to the outfield. So he's learning a new position on the fly. I think if you just looked at what he did in 2025 and you'd say, all right, it was a 90 WRC plus, it was a 670 OPS, it was kind of a pedestrian season. I think it was actually, considering everything, a pretty great season for him. He's already in 13 games, matched his F4 output from last year nearly, which is incredible. But there's a lot of really fantasy-friendly stuff here. I mean, the barrel rate's probably not going to maintain at 17%. That's pretty crazy. But he doesn't need it to with that ballpark and the Crawford boxes in left field. I think that you could see, you know, 25 home runs as soon as this season from Cam Smith. That would probably be, yeah, that's higher than any of the projections see it. I think they're calling for the top number would be about 18 over the course of the whole season. I think he can push that considering the power that he has displayed with that ballpark. He's got the speed. I mean, he's already stolen the three bases. He has 96th percentile sprint speed. I think we could see the upside here of a 2020 or a 25-25 season. I do worry a little bit about the contact profile, as I've mentioned a couple times throughout this show. That's one of the things I really focus in on. He chases a little bit more than I'd like. Zone contact's not great, and he's got a 16% swinging strike rate. So I'm not sure he's going to be a huge asset in terms of the batting average, but if he could be a 23-homer, 22-steal guy and hit you 250 or so, you're talking about Wyatt Langford's stat line from last year, which is kind of what I think the upside could be for Cam Smith this season.
Yeah, there's definitely that upside. I mean, he's shown that, and I would love to see him actually like lean into his home ballpark, because you look at some of the batted ball angles for him, like the pull air rate, not great. You know, air rate, pull rate, not really what you want to see from a guy in Houston. Like, you know, I'm hoping he can like talk with, you know, Altuve, talk with, you know, Paredes. Maybe get on the phone with Bregman, you know, who obviously was there for a long time. Like right-handed bats that really utilize the Crawford boxes and ended up with, you know, more home runs than you'd probably expect those guys to have given their quality of contact. But yeah, if he really starts kind of leaning into, you know, get pull side pop a bit more, like last year was 35.5% pull rate. This year, only 30% pull average, only 3% this year. Like, he's not utilizing that ballpark. I mean, he's already played a handful of games there. So I'm not like, you know, super worried about that yet. But that's really, I think, the key for him, because all the skills are there under the hood. Yeah, there's some contact issues, like you mentioned. I don't think he's going to be, you know, more than a 250, 260 type of hitter. But the upside to go 20 plus is absolutely there. So, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued here by Smith. He's still 23 years old. Still a lot of good, you know, good ballpark, good lineup. He's got all those really good hitters hitting around him, you know, Yordan Alvarez as well. Yeah, so I think he's going to be a pretty good player. Maybe one of those kind of back-end top 100 guys as well.
Yeah, I could see it. Just stick with Isak Paredes. This guy only pulls fly balls. That's all he does. So if you can rub a little bit of that off of Cam Smith, we would much appreciate it.
I know, right? Like, I'm going to pull it up real quick. I want to see. What was Paredes' pull air rate? Oh, my word. This year, it's 43% pull air rate. Last year, it was 38.5%. With a, he's a 90. This year, 90.5% air rate. Like, what?
He's built for that park, which is, all, you know, side note, why I always thought Paredes was going to play. Like, you don't have a player so tailor-made for that ballpark that you're not going to play. There was his price was really low in redraft just because they were a little bit crowded, and then there was the Pena injury, but
yeah,
he was essentially built for that ballpark.
Oh, 100%. And I've never seen a guy that has been more influenced by his ballpark than Parada. It's like you saw him, you know, do well in Tampa. Then he got traded to the Cubs, where the left field wall was what, 25, 30 feet further or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he sucked with the Cubs. He had 3 home runs in 52 games with the Cubs. Now he's back in Houston. And you're like, all right, I'm back in. I mean, I'm not a big Paredes guy in general, but, you know, in the right ballpark, I can be intrigued for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Lean on, you know, come on, Cam. Talk to Paredes. Talk to Altuve. You know, I'm sure Altuve has got Bregman's number. Give him a call. You know, learn how to utilize that ballpark for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We talked about one catcher off to a bad start earlier. We got a few that are off to really good starts, and these two in particular. We got Shea Bangaliers, as he's, you know, admirably known as now. You know, hitting 289, 333, 644. 5 home runs and 48 plate appearances, kind of like the only Athletic that's really off to a hot start. And then the other guy, Drake Baldwin, you know, coming off a phenomenal rookie year last year, and looks like he's taking things to new heights this year. Already has 5 home runs and 59 plate appearances, slashing 321, 390, 623, hitting right in the middle of a very talented Atlanta lineup, you know, with the guys like Acuna and Olsen, Riley and Ozzie and Harris and all them hitting around him. I know that lineup's had its ups and downs, but that's still one of the more talented lineups in all of baseball, and he's hitting right in the middle of it. So, you know, at this point, you know, I think Langeliers was the C3 off the board, I want, or C3 or C4. I think Baldwin was a few spots. He was like C6, C7, C8 range. So guys that are already, you know, drafted pretty highly, that are, you know, exceeding expectations so far. So what are you thinking here with Langeliers and Baldwin? I mean, we'll start with Langeliers because he's a guy that, you know, last year had the best year of his career. You know, home runs have always been there, but every year he just seems to get better and better as a hitter, like making more contact, dropping the K rate, you know, things that you want to see. And that really came to fruition last year. And now he's kind of proving that last year was not a fluke, and that he's here to stay as an elite option. So with Langeliers being 28, great ballpark, great lineup around him, is he maybe the new C1? You think he can overtake Raleigh for, you know, kind of that top catcher in fantasy?
Man, it's going to be really a toss-up next year. I could see Raleigh getting back and being the C1. I could see it being either of these two guys. I could see it being the next guy we haven't talked about yet. I could see it being William Contreras. It's probably not trending towards Augustin Ramirez, but if he ends up, you know, turning things around and giving you a 2020 season as a catcher, some people might want to take him first. It's the deepest the position I think has probably ever been. I didn't end up with any Shea Langeliers, which is really annoying at this stage, seeing what he, especially because all those home runs in the first weekend came against my Blue Jays. He hit 2 on the first day of the season. He hit another one the next day. I worry a little bit about the strikeout rate. Last year was a phenomenal drop for him. He went down below 20%. It was backed up by the swinging strike rate as well, which was down at 11%. This year, despite his contact rate being improved, his general contact rate is at 73. His end zone is at 88. But the swinging strike rate is back up after we saw the 1 year drop down to 11 points. It's back up to 14 and change. And to this point, he's striking out 33% of the time. His first couple of years were 34, 29, 27. That's probably closer to who he is. My concern with Langeliers, he's hitting 289 right now. He's got a 333 BABIP. I would be very surprised if that continues, even with a very hitter-friendly park. The previous 3 years were 218, 205, 224. And while I don't think it'll be quite that bad, I think that some of the swing and miss can keep the upside for that batting average down a little bit. I think if he hits 250, you should consider that a pretty big win. But I think that even 230, 240 is probably closer to what is going to happen, because despite the contact rates being better, if you're adding more swing and miss, then I think those strikeouts are going to continue to chip away at the batting average a little bit. So I wouldn't expect 277 again, but 35 homers, some chip and speed, a really good lineup. What will be a really good lineup? It's been struggling to this point, but they haven't played a lot at home. I would expect they'll turn things around. That's kind of it for Shangaliers. I've kind of combined his name.
I like it.
I don't have any problem with people who took him early. He's paying off, but I do think that batting average will come back down to earth.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And with the Athletics, something I noticed earlier when I was looking at Jacob Wilson, a lot of them are chasing a lot more this year. I'm not sure if it's like a philosophy change or maybe it's some random early season thing that'll stabilize. We'll see. But like, I think Jacob Wilson's chase rate was like 53% or something like insanely ridiculous, which is, you know, obviously he's got the context to back it up, but that's, you know, super high. A lot of these guys are chasing a lot. I mean, Kurtz really isn't, though. Kurtz is chasing more, just not, you know, at a terrible rate. But you're seeing, you know, Langoliers is chasing more. He's got a chase rate 35%, though he's always been a higher chase rate guy. But yeah, I think it's really, you know, really all comes down to how much of last year sticks this year. I mean, is he, if he's fully last year and then adds him even more home runs, then yeah, he could be the C1 easily. But if it's somewhere in the middle, which I think is kind of where I'm at as well, where he's hitting like 250, 260, 30, 35 home runs, you know, 75 plus runs and a good amount of RBI as well. And in a handful of steals to go along with it, which is always nice to get from your catcher. I mean, he has a 90th percentile sprint speed. He's a good athlete. You know, that's been very apparent for a long time. He always moved well. But yeah, that contact rate and the strikeout rate really kind of the two X factors here for him. 33% K rate right now. So hopefully that can go back down. But yeah, I think Langoliers is going to be right in that C1 discussion. You know, same with Baldwin, too. I mean, this guy, you know, I saw him, you know, kind of in the minor leagues early on. And I was like, man, this guy is just, he's a hitter. I mean, it was one of those guys where you just, like, you know, watch him play and you're like, man, this guy, the bat is legit. And then you see all the metrics and they back it up and you feel even better about it. And, you know, last year as a rookie catcher, I mean, I take these numbers and then kind of even boost them even higher because he's a rookie catcher. He had a near 50% hard hit rate last year, 11% barrel rate, nearly a 92 mile an hour average EV, all while having just a 15% K rate, you know, above average contact rates. A lot of good for Drake Baldwin, and he's taken that and done even better this year. I mean, I see he's off to a hot start, 321, 390, 623, five bombs, a lot of good metrics under the hood there, a lot of red on the Savant page. Is he a guy that you think could even make a run at that C1? I mean, maybe he's not quite as flashy as Raleigh or a few other catchers, but he might be like, you know, one of the better combinations of like ceiling and floor, especially from a young catcher. We don't see that very often. So do you think Baldwin could kind of work his way into that C1 discussion here?
Well, hell with C1. He's the overall player number one right now.
Yeah.
All of fantasy. I kid. He's not going to finish as the number one player. But can you imagine if we had a catcher who doesn't steal, finishes the number one player? He just hits 58 homers and hits 325 or something. I think that the lack of speed holds him back because even, you know, the Raleighs, the William Contreras's, the other guy, the Langoliers, like these guys will contribute at least a handful of steals, which I think will really help in terms of the player raters, in terms of how they rank. Baldwin could be drafted as the number one guy. I don't know if he'd finish as the number one guy just based on that, but plus, you know, 20 plus homers is even that might be selling him short. Like he had 19 homers in 440 plate appearances last year. This might be 30 homers, honestly, the way he started with five in the bank already. He's always hit for a good batting average. And this is a guy who maybe he does hit 290 to 300. The projections are, you know, a little bit lower, but I think the upside there is a 300 batting average in what is ostensibly a good lineup. Although I know we've been saying that for several years that the Braves are going to turn things around, and they haven't, and they've seemed to be a little bit cursed before the season with all the injuries and Profar and Waldrop and everything happening. But I think, you know, you give him a whole season worth of at-bats in that lineup with Acuna re-added to it, you could be looking at 65, 70 runs, 90 to 100 RBI to go along with what could be 30 homers and a 300 batting average. Even without the steals, you know, I've kind of talked myself into it. I could see a world where he does finish as the number one catcher and gets drafted as such next year.
Yeah, I think it's weird to say for a second-year catcher, but he feels like he might be the safest. Like I feel like the floor isn't quite as low for him as it might be with Raleigh, as it might be with Langoliers and with Ramirez and all these other guys, because there's no real weakness. I mean, I guess you could say, like you mentioned, the lack of steals, but that's not really a weakness. That's just not an addition. Yeah, he doesn't add. It doesn't add value. It's not like zero steals takes away value from your team. You still got to find those steals elsewhere. But I mean, hey, if he's giving me really good production in four categories, you can live with that. Absolutely. Yeah. And he's never going to be a steals guy. He's like, I don't think he's even attempted a steal in the last like 5 years. So he's not, I don't think he's going to magically give you 10. But hey, if he can give you, again, this really good four category production, hit you 280, hit 25, 30 home runs, you know, drive in 90 to 100, you know, score 75 or something like that. I think that definitely could be in that discussion for the C1. But yeah, like you kind of alluded to earlier, and as I've said many times myself, catcher is freaking loaded right now. Like, this is the best I've seen this position in my lifetime of playing fantasy baseball. You know, I don't think it's really even that remotely close. Where I was waiting and getting like, oh yeah, like you mentioned, like that Adley, Rutschman, Rain, like Ramirez was back there, Kirk, Alvarez, like Carter Jensen, even. You even got into like the C2 range where it's like, oh, Dylan Dingler, he's still pretty good. Like, there's still like a lot of Kyle Teal, and he's hurt, obviously, but
yeah,
you know, a lot of young talent, and even more coming, you know, Basayo, you know, some of these young guys that are kind of getting added into the mix now. Yeah, this position's in a really good spot for a really long time because a lot of these guys are, you know, below 30 years old for the most part. So, yeah. This position is going to be pretty good, and especially if this next guy, the last guy we're talking about here, can maintain that eligibility, you know, for the long term and not just this year and next. I hope he does. That's Ben Rice, who currently actually leads the major leagues in WRC plus, a nice little 250 WRC plus right now. He's ahead of Yordan Alvarez, Willier Abreu, Andy Páez, and Sal Stewart, you know, for the top five spots. And then Brendan Donovan in sixth. You know, wow. Good for Brendan Donovan. I mean,
yeah,
probably the only Seattle guy that's hitting right now for the most part, but
yeah.
Pretty cool to see Donovan up there. I know it's early in the season, but Ben Rice leading the way. He's hitting .333, .500, .727, three bombs in 44 plate appearances for the Yankees, 25% walk rate as well. Kind of just living up to the hype of, you know, those lofty, lofty expectations thrust upon him, you know, last year, this offseason, through draft season. You know, Joe, you saw that ADP that seemed to rise and rise and rise. Then it kind of stabilized in, you know, February and March. But, you know, at that point he was, you know, a top 50-ish draft pick, which is higher than I thought it was going to go. But I was still buying because, you know, this is a guy that, you know, I saw in AA, and he was one of those guys that just, like, stood out immediately. And then ever since then, like, the metrics have always been phenomenal. Like, you look at the Savant page, his Fangraphs page, all the rates, all the sliders, all the percentiles, for the most part, are very, very good. No real huge weakness in the profile. You know, whiff rate's a little high right now, sure, but, you know, this is a guy that makes contact, that gets on base, that hits for power. Obviously, a lefty in Yankee Stadium, that's always an added bonus, too. So, I mean, Ben Rice, off to a phenomenal start, living up to the hype. You know, are you just all in at this point, or are you still kind of waiting to see if he can do this for a full season?
No, I'm fully bought in. I mean, I was fully bought in after last year, and then I think the Goldschmidt signing kind of put everybody off just a little bit, just thinking, okay, how many at-bats is he going to get against left-hand pitching now? Is that going to minimize his opportunities? It shouldn't. It really shouldn't. I mean, if you look at the Savant pages and even beyond the Savant pages and dig into the specific stats, he's already arguably one of the best hitters in all of baseball. I don't think that's hyperbole. Now, part of that maybe is that he debuted a little bit later than a lot of guys do, making his major league debut at 25 as opposed to 21 or 22. He maybe was a little bit more seasoned than the average guy that you're looking at coming up to the bigs. I don't think there's really anything I can say to criticize him in terms of looking at 2026. I think that he is a star, arguably a superstar, not in terms of name value, but maybe in a couple years. The only thing I can say that worries me a little bit is he may lose catcher eligibility after this season. He hasn't caught yet through the first 10 games of the year. Now, if you're playing on a site like Yahoo where you need only 5 games, then you might get it. If you're looking at like an NFBC threshold or other sites where it's a higher number, or, you know, 15 or 20 starts, that might be a situation where you have to start thinking ahead. If you are in a dynasty keeper league and you have Ben Rice as your catcher, you got to start thinking about what you're going to do next year. Not that this is definitive. He might need to catch. Maybe there's an injury to Austin Wells or something that they need him to catch. But the way things stand right now, I wouldn't expect him to have catcher eligibility in 2027.
No, I don't think he does either. And like, I did a little like crystal ball episode recently, and I had him as a first baseman. You know, I don't think he, I was like, maybe he retains it in 27. But, you know, I was looking at 2029. I was looking 3 years out, and I'm like, at this point, I think it's a very slim chance that he has catcher eligibility. I think he's a full-time first baseman. I think they would just want to keep his bat in the lineup and not have to have him out of the lineup, you know, as you do with catchers for the most part. So, you know, I mean, he's arguably their – I think you can make a case for him being their number two hitter right now. I mean, obviously, you know, Jazz is fun. You know, Bellinger's there. And obviously, Judge is number one for that team. But you can make a case just for a pure hitting ability that Rice is number two on that team. Yeah. Yeah, I think you make a strong case for it. So you want him in that lineup every day, you know, hitting fourth, right – you know, right behind Judge and Bellinger. That's a phenomenal spot to be in. You got Stanton and Jazzy Jazz behind you, so you got some protection as well. And he's in a really good lineup spot, really good ballpark, obviously, for left-handed pull power, which he leans into. And I think his angles are good for that park. So, yeah, I've been all in on Ben Rice for a while now, and I'm definitely all in now. I think he could be the C1 if he retains eligibility, but even if not, I think this could be – maybe even like a top three. I mean, it would surprise me, you know, let's fast forward to like draft season next year, if he was like the third first baseman off the board behind Vladdy and behind Kurt. I think Kurt gets it going. So like it could be Vladdy, Kurtz, and then Ben Rice, because all the other guys are kind of older now, you know, the Harpers, the Olsons, you know, all of them, you know, Alonzo's up there, but I could see Rice being, you know, a top 30 pick and being the number three guy off the board at that position. I mean, I think he's that good.
I could see him going ahead of Kurtz. I could see it.
Yeah.
You know, safer contact profile. He's still got a nice park. He's got a better lineup around him. I forget if we have a solidified date of how long they're going to be in Sacramento for. Is next year confirmed in Sacramento as well?
I think next year, as far as I know, I think 2028. I might be completely off on this. I feel like it changed a few times, so it's hard to keep track.
Yeah.
Keeps getting like pushed out a little bit. But last thing I remember hearing, I think it's 2028 will be the first year in Vegas, but I'm not 100% sure on that by any means.
So I guess it would depend on the ballpark, but if Kurtz over the next couple of years loses that advantageous home ballpark, I could see the scales tipping more towards Ben Rice as the number two. Or, I mean, hell, Vladdy has his own ground ball power troubles for here and there. I mean, it didn't happen in the playoffs where he was hitting a home run every other at bat, but this guy with 23 home runs next season. As a Blue Jay fan, this is literally killing me to say this, but Ben Rice could even jump over Vladdy at some point in the next couple of years.
Yeah, no, I could see that. I mean, the skills are there for Ben Rice for sure, and he's a perfect example. Like you mentioned, how he debuted a little bit older than you see for most prospects. Something I've said 1,000 times on this podcast: prospect development, or just development in general, not linear. You get your Connor Griffins and your Sotos and Tatises and Acunas that are up super early. And you get some of your later bloomers like Ben Rice, who debuts at 25. You see that all the time too. So, yeah, there's different paths to the major leagues, and that's why, you know, I think you see that more in baseball than any other sport, which is another, you know, reason 6,258 why we love baseball so much, because there's many paths to success in baseball. So, but that's a good spot to end it on with Ben Rice there. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. This was an absolute blast talking some early season hitting standouts. What do you got going on? You're obviously a busy man at a few different spots here. What do you got going on right now?
Well, thank you for having me on, man. It's been too long since you and I have caught up. I'll have to have you on to one of the several podcasts that I am a part of. Sleeper in the Bus. I haven't recorded with Paul and Justin in like a week and a half or so. It sometimes just gets tricky for us to all align our schedules, but they will be doing two start pitchers, I think, tomorrow morning, looking ahead to next week. And there's usually two or three Sleeper in the Bust episodes in the feed every week. I'm usually on one to two of them, depending on the time of year. Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast, I host one episode a week. We got an episode with Mr. DVR, Derek Van Riper himself, coming out tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, by the time you guys are hearing this anyway. Well, this will be out on Friday. So you guys, once you've done listening to this, go check out the show with DVR. We went through the panic meter, talked about 10 slow starts. We mentioned Nick Kurtz. We mentioned Raleigh. So some more thoughts on those guys and a few others, Shane McClanahan, Bubba Chandler, some other slow starters that we mentioned as well. And then you can check out my weekly articles, one of them at Fangraphs. This week I talked about 5 breakout starting pitchers that I am buying into. And then also a weekly waiver wire article that comes out at FTN. So if you're not sick of me, you will be very, very soon.
Nobody should be sick of Joe. He does great work. He's a good analyst, good player. I mean, just won the big NFBC postseason contest last year. So congrats again on that. Nice little chunk of change into your bank account there. That's got to feel good. And Yeah, it's a good time of year. A lot of stuff going on. Obviously, you know, follow all my stuff. Got my Patreon, Rota Baller. A lot of great stuff at Rota Baller as well. Follow Joe on Twitter at Joe Orrico. That's ORRICO99. Obviously, I am at Eric Cross MLB, and I will be back with you again early next week. But until then, everyone take care.